the Masechta. As many of you are well aware from experience. And when it comes to the application Bizman Hazeh of the principles of Hilchos Gerushin, the literature is also very vast. The issues are extremely complex, and it is based on this principle that the Gemara Kedushin says, "Kosheni Yodeh V'Tiv Gittim Kedushin L'Yedach Ha'Esek Imoyen," that requires expertise, training, and certification to be involved in the Siddur Gittin process. There are very few Rabbanim who, in fact, are certified for these purposes, because the pitfalls are very great. If there's any mistake made with respect to a get, then the wife in question is still considered to be an Eishes Ish. When she would remarry somebody else, she would really be committing an Issa Kares, and any children born from any future union would be Mamzerim. And therefore, there is a tremendous amount at stake for the couple and for the future of Klal Yisrael every single time that a get is performed, and it requires tremendous yedius, requires tremendous care, requires tremendous precision, and is also something that requires tremendous yiras Hashem. We see how sometimes even the most simple and short formulation that needs to be recited in order to change somebody's status that is engaged in by the people of the highest intellect and the highest professional credentials in a moment which is anticipated by millions of individuals and broadcast on national TV can merit a do-over, as we saw with respect to the inauguration a few days ago. It was probably the most well-attended inauguration in American history. It was something like 2 million people descending in Washington, and much attention was given to all the pomp and ceremony and fanfare and the luncheons and the bands and the parties and the speeches. But really all that the inauguration essentially consisted of was about 30 seconds of a recitation that was completely botched up. Therefore, there was a question as to whether the inductee in question was really president under the Constitution, so that yesterday they had to do over the ceremony entirely. How much more so we can appreciate just how much care and precision has to be paid every single time a get is done. There used to even be a practice that those who were Mesadre Gittin would fast on the day that they would be Mesadre Gets. They shouldn't have any distractions whatsoever. Nowadays, we generally assume that being hungry is more of a distraction than eating, but the sentiment is an accurate one, that it really requires tremendous concentration. There are very few personalities that are deemed to be ideally suited for the task of Siddur Gittin. The main personality here at Yeshiva, who used to be involved in Siddur Gittin, was Rav Shechter's father, Zatzal, Rav Melech Shechter. Rav Melech Shechter was a dayan and somebody who would be Mesadre Gittin at the Beis Din of America, where I worked as the director for 10 years before I took over here as the dean of the yeshiva. And there are many stories that one could learn from him, and I had the zechus of attending both a chalitza that he performed here at yeshiva some decades ago, and a get that he performed here at yeshiva. And you realize in observing the get process that on the one hand it's a ritual that accomplishes the divorce, krisus, between the husband and the wife. On the other hand, it's also a ritual which is wrought with all kinds of societal and sociological implications in terms of the meaning of divorce, the appropriateness of a divorce, the appropriateness of giving a get, the appropriateness of the timing of giving a get, and all of these considerations are part and parcel of the process of a get that a Rav Yisrael needs to be attuned to and needs to be sensitive about in terms of his training. So therefore, in the forms that the Mara Mekomos that I presented to you, the starting point of the discussion is ironically perhaps the ending point of the Masechta of Maseches Gittin, which talks about the grounds from which one is justified in terms of giving a divorce. One of the great criticisms of modern-day society is perhaps that divorce is too rampant. The New York Times recently reported that there's been a drop in the amount of divorce, but this is probably only because part of the divorce process is getting as much money from the other spouse as possible, so it's not financially expedient in financially distressed times to initiate a divorce. And part of the reason why divorce is on the drop is because marriage is on the drop. So less marriages, so less divorces. But all of this is symptomatic of a diminishment of values in a society in which marriage and the sanctity of marriage in general is less and less revered in the secular culture, and alternative arrangements have become more rampant. We in our halakhic tradition do very much value the sanctity of marriage, and therefore we also take seriously the notion of when it is appropriate to divorce. We all are familiar with the Gemara at the very end of Gittin. It says, Rabbi Elazar kol megarish ishto rishona afil mizbeach movid alav demos, that even the mizbeach cries. It's true that there are some who say wryly, sometimes they're tears of joy, but generally speaking, Pashuk Pshat is that we're dealing with tears of sadness, that we're unhappy when a marriage fails, when it falls apart. And we take seriously the notion that we should not discard a marriage too quickly. So Rav Melech Shechter used to have the practice of actually asking the couple, whenever a couple came for a get, no matter how far apart they seemed to be or how finished and washed up the marriage appeared, to actually ask them, are you sure that you want to get divorced? Are you sure there's no chance of reconciliation? Maybe you want to reconsider. I saw this with my own eyes. Apparently, in all the years, those who have inside information can correct me, but I'm told that in all the years, maybe there was one case, something like that, where the couple actually took him up on his suggestion. Generally speaking, when couples come to a Beis Din Bizman Hazeh, it's because the marriage really, truly is over. They've gone through counseling. Maybe they have a civil divorce already. They're already separated for many months. Or sometimes it's even an aguna situation. We're worried the husband's going to run away if we don't do a get because he's somewhat secular or somewhat obstinate. So we're not looking to mess with his presence unduly. While generally speaking, when parties come to the Beis Din, they have made up their minds. There still was a practice when I was at the Beis Din of America, when a couple would call up for a divorce, if they were still basically living together and they just had a fight a couple of days earlier, especially a couple of Bishona Rishona, where, you know, it's not unheard of that there might be a fight Bishona Rishona, and so somebody called up all upset that they want to arrange a get, we'd say, given that you're still essentially living together, you've just been separated a couple of days, let's let it wait a little while. Maybe go for counseling, speak to your local Rav, we'll speak to you a month from now. So there still was a certain amount of discrimination in terms of the scheduling for a get, and reference to marriage counseling whenever deemed appropriate. But the Mishnah lists a machlokis between Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai, Rabbi Kiva as to when it's appropriate for a man to divorce, and it's assumed that if the grounds for divorce are not present, it would be an avera for a man to divorce his wife. That's the famous tshuva that the Bar Hetev quotes at the beginning of Hilchos Gittin. Why don't we make a bracha on a get? So he says we don't make a bracha on a get because, as the Rashba says in a tshuva, that sometimes there are geirush and shehem b'aveira. Like, for example, when the grounds that are found at the end of Maseches Gittin are not present, that a man has no right to go about divorcing his wife. So therefore, sometimes since it could be an aveira, that's his explanation as to why we don't make a bracha on it yet. So Shammai says, based on the pasuk of Kimatzavar Evas Dover, So Beis Shammai focuses on Eves Dover, that a man can only divorce his wife when he finds Eves Dover, that she's committed a Dover Shabeva, she's cheated on him, but she's broken the sanctity of the marriage. Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel says even Afilu Hikticha Tavshilo, even if she burns the chulent. Burns the chulent also, look, what did he marry her for, right? She has to, you know, make the chulent. So she burns the chulent, so he understands Ki Matzava Eves Dover, O Eva O Dover. That it could be Eva, it could be she's being unfaithful to him, or acting in a way which is overly promiscuous, or it could be Dover, that he just finds something hateful in her behavior, such as her non-performance of marital obligations. Rabbi Akiva goes a step further and says, "Afilu Batsa Acheres Nohe Meno." Even if he finds a girl that he likes more, he finds a woman he finds more attractive, so then it's okay, it's permissible for him to divorce his wife. The whole thing appears counterintuitive because usually Beis Hillel and Rabbi Akiva are known as sort of in the Mekilim, you know, camp, and here they appear to be at least harsh in terms of the sensitivity towards the woman, right? That Beis Hillel is saying, it's okay, she burns the chulent, it's okay to divorce her. Rabbi Akiva says usually they're known as very sensitive. Shitos. So there's a nice essay by Shlomo Aviner in a sefer called Pirkei Ava, Ben Ish L'Ishto, the lessons of marriage and relationship of husband and wife, in which he suggests, and I've seen this elsewhere as well, actually. I'm trying to remember where else I saw this in another sefer recently. I believe, don't hold me to it, I believe that Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky has this in the Emes Liakov also, that he says that really what is the nature of the machlokis is they're arguing about what is the perspective that one should have within a marriage, a perspective that one should have towards his wife. That according to Beis Shammai, the perspective of marriage simply is that you take a covenant, you're going to be faithful to each other as long as that covenant is observed, so that's considered to be a satisfactory marriage. But he still says, no, the nature of the relationship runs deeper than that. It's not only a question of being faithful, but it's a question of each one having certain obligations to give to the other. The wife performs certain services that the husband needs. The husband performs certain services the wife needs. And if that's broken down, then that's not an appropriate, if one doesn't feel that obligation, that's not an appropriate perspective to marriage. Rabbi Akiva goes even further and says the appropriate perspective you should have towards marriage is that it shouldn't even be shayach that one would look at another woman, that one would look at another potential spouse, that it should be so, the love that one should feel towards a spouse should be so overpowering, should be so great, that the perspective that one needs to have in order for it to be a viable marriage that the Torah considers to be the nature of the Jewish marriage relationship is that it is not only necessary to be faithful, that it's not only necessary to perform marital obligations, but it's also necessary to have the perspective towards each other that, of course, you're the only one that could possibly be for me. Therefore, it's actually a dose of mussar in each respective shita of just how committed one has to be to the marital relationship. But be it as it may, how do we paskin? So the Shulchan Aruch paskins basically that in Siman Kuf Yotes, Lo Yigarish Adam Ishto Rishon Elam Kei Matzah Bar Eves Dover. One should not divorce his wife unless she finds that she is promiscuous. So that sounds like Beis Shammai, which is odd because normally we paskin like Beis Hillel. So the answer is that the reality is that we do paskin like Beis Hillel, that one could in fact divorce based on what the Gemara describes at the end of the Masechta of is Kisanei Shaleach, a pasuk in Malachi, that the hated one can be sent away. And Rabbi Yehuda says, "Im Sanesa Shaleach." If you hate her, you send her away. Rabbi Yochanan may asano yemishaleach, that the one who sends away his wife is himself hated. Below pligi habizug rishon habizug shedi. The difference is whether we're talking about the first zug or the same or the second zug, meaning a first marriage or second marriage. Some say zug rishon is not necessarily a first marriage, but one who marries a woman when he's very very young. Be it as it may, Pashup Shad Zug Rishon is one's first marriage. It should be their only marriage, ideally, but their initial loving relationship, where we assume that this is the wife who is assigned to him, Min HaShemayim, So in such a case, even though the strictly speaking, one could divorce his wife for hikticha tavshilo, for hating her, says the Shulchan Aruch, ve'ein roilo lemaya l'shalech ishto rishayna, that one should not be hasty in divorcing his first wife, aval shniya imsnei ashi yishalchena, but the second one, not only is it mutter, but one that does not even have to hesitate if there is a hateful relationship that develops between the couple. However, the Ramah adds an important footnote, which is of a megarshim midaita mutter, that most of these principles are really applicable when you have chayrim the rabbeinu, before you had chayrim the rabbeinu gershom. So technically speaking, even though it could be an avera, but nonetheless, the husband was not allowed to divorce his wife against her will. Chayrim the Rabbeinu Gershom introduced that one is not allowed to marry more than one wife, and one is also not allowed to marry a woman against, one is not allowed to divorce a woman against her will. So therefore, says the Ramah, so if we're dealing with present-day circumstances where divorce is generally assumed to be consensual, in Migarsha Midaita Mutter, if she is a willing, voluntary participant in the divorce process, so then it is Heter Gamma. So the Piskei Tshuva qualifies this to some degree. If you look in the Piskei Tshuva Sipkaton Gimel, so the Piskei Tshuva says, Kasa B'Sefer Beis Meir, V'Yirin Afilos Daiti, Daka kishihu tovea. I'm sorry. The previous line. The efsha she'aparetzon isha. Even if the woman is willing, she'azed isa b'dav. Even though there's no prohibition, mikol makom ein roi lasos kein. Nonetheless, it is still improper, even if the woman says it's okay with her. So, Beis Meir explains, what does this mean? If the man comes to his wife and says, you know what, I'm sick of you, I don't like you anymore, you burnt the children, I want a divorce, and she says, look, you want a divorce, I'm not going to hold you hostage, even though she agrees, nonetheless, her heart inside is crying. It's just that she can't really protest. How could she remain living with a man who doesn't want her? But when the woman herself seeks the divorce, so that it is heter gomer. So we still have a limitation, even bisman hazeh. Important to know from a rav's perspective that unless there are compelling grounds, namely eves dava, you can't live. It's a din of sota. You can't live with your wife if she actually cheated on you. But anything short of extreme promiscuity, it is improper for one to rush to divorce his wife. And even if she's willing, if he's the one who initiated it, it is not something which is encouraged, even bizman hazeh. So this is an important perspective. It's very interesting that these principles of when it is appropriate to divorce, of Erva's Dava, of Hikticha Tavshilo, Matzah Cheres Noemena, or run from the direction of the husband to the wife. This is understandable on sub level, since he's the one who gives the get. The woman does not give the get to the husband, but she accepts the get. We don't have the same gemaras with respect to under what grounds a woman can ask for a divorce from her husband. We have gemaras about when we're koyfer, under what circumstances do we compel a man to divorce his wife. But we don't find necessarily that we have the same restrictions in terms of a wife wanting to initiate a divorce. If you look in the Tzitz Eliezer and Chelek Yud Zayin, there's a very interesting juxtaposition of tshuvos in Siman Nun Beis and Siman Nun Gimel in Chelek Yud Zayin, in which he has really two mirror image cases. It appears one case of a woman who wants to stay in a marriage, and the husband really doesn't like her because he feels that she's difficult to get along with. There's no shalom bayis. She's mean to him. She screams at him, and he wants a heter me'er rabbanim because she refuses to accept the get. And the next tshuva is basically a woman who's protesting that her husband is a foul-smelling, difficult person to live with, and she wants a divorce. And in the first shuva, the Tzitz Eliezer says to the husband, you made a commitment to this woman you would take care of her your entire life, and so what that she hates you and you can't get along, you still have an obligation as long as she wants to stay married to take care of her. And we make a takanus not to divorce a woman against her their will. Shaloi tehei benos Yisrael hefker, so that benos Yisrael should not have been be made into hefker, and therefore you are stuck with your wife. And even if she curses you, and that's considered to be grounds for divorce, nonetheless, maybe she's cursing you because you're mean to her. In which case, she has the right to curse you, or it's not considered to be punishable. So therefore, he frowns upon, he refuses to grant the heter mei rabbanan. It's part of a bezdin psak. Then the next tshuva, which is sort of almost, almost the reverse case. He says, what are you doing? The woman doesn't want you. She dislikes you. The Rambam paskins mois alai. The woman says that the man is disgusting, that we have the right to compel a divorce. And even though we don't paskin like the Rambam, nonetheless, we do paskin that one can certainly put pressure on the appropriate pressures on the husband, as we'll discuss later, called achakas to Rabbeinu Tam, to encourage him to give a divorce under those circumstances, that if the woman is unhappy, then you have no right to keep her in the marriage relationship. You should give her a divorce. It almost seems like there's a bit of a double standard if you read those two tshuvos in juxtaposition. And you kind of get a sense that there is some such bifurcation. Because, for example, Rabbeinu Gershom, who on the one hand paskid that you're not allowed to divorce a woman against the will, also was of the opinion, it's brought down by Rami Mirutenberg in his Shuvas, Dalid Simon Reish Nun, not in the Yamara Mikomos, that if a man says that a woman is meredis on her husband, so he paskid that, like the Rosh Yeshiva that quoted in the Tosas Arid at the end of Masechus Gittin, that we compel a husband to give again to those circumstances when the woman is meredis on him. So if we would say that you could just be meredis, you just rebel against the other party, and we're going to require a get to be given, so what has he gained by saying a get can't be given to a wife al kocha? Let the husband rebel against the wife, and we'll require her to accept the get. So obviously it appears that there seems to be a different orientation, that a man who goes into a marriage is making a certain commitment towards the wife, and we don't release him so easily from that commitment, and we don't even consider it, even when he has a heter to be released, we say that it could still be a shtickle b'aveira if it's not coming from her, if she doesn't also desire the divorce in the same measure as the husband desires it. Now, what happens when a couple is living together and Now, Rav Moshe Feitstein in the Igbos Moshe Yoredeya Chelek Dalid Siftesvah basically gives what he considers to be the appropriate orientation that a couple should have as to when they should be willing to go forward with a divorce, and that when a get should be given and not withheld. So he talks about Sif Beis. Many years have passed, there's no Shalom Bayis. They're already living separately, so that there's no Chayi Ishus anymore. Even if Bezdin came to the conclusion that they cannot affect reconciliation. So in such a case where reconciliation cannot be affected, with all the hishtadlus of the Bezdin, so says Rav Moshe Kanire, Mizeh she Bezdin soive she yeshal asos shalom b'neim, as midina toira ba'ofen kazeh muchrochen lehizgarish. That it is improper for either side to hold up the get when there is no existence anymore of chayi ishus or shalom bayis ve'ein l'shus l'shum tzad la'agen, and nobody should withhold the get under those circumstances. Lo abal es ishto v'lo isha es abal v'shum ikum mitzad tviyas momon, not the husband the wife, not the wife the husband, through any and you cannot bring any kind of extraneous claims to justify holding up the get, to say, well, I would give a get because the marriage is over, but first, you know, I feel that she owes me some money, he owes me some money, says nothing doing, says you go to a bezin, so again, you go to a bezin to take care of everything, but you don't hold up the get based on the unwillingness of one side to take care of whatever remaining monetary claims the other one has. Rather, they should take care of the get as soon as there is a clear indication that the chayi ishus has come to an end. Now, there's the additional question as to whether that just means a get should be done, Whether means a get can even be done before the monetary matters have been resolved, or whether it's just a question of go to a bezin to resolve everything, and bezin will resolve everything. At the end of resolving everything, they'll do the get too. But that's a separate question we'll get to in a couple of minutes. Now, what happens during the time period in which one kind of knows that they're on the precipice of divorce? Let's say the husband already has in mind that he's going to divorce his wife. So the Gemara at the end of Gittin on Daf Sadi quoted Rav Misharshia, basically is saying, Amalei Rav Misharshia, L'Ravim Libo L'Garsha, this is on Sadi Min Aleph, Libo L'Garsha, Yosher Takta V'Shemash Domahu. What if he knows he wants to divorce her, but she's still living with him, and they're still having relations and everything else? So this is a violation of the pasuk that one has no right to basically have an inner plan, a secret hidden plan to do bad to somebody else while that person is still servicing you confidently. So this is a violation of that iser, and therefore it is improper for him to. To what? Sounds like it's improper for him to have relations, at least with his wife at that point in time. And then there's a separate Gemara Nedarim that says that there are nine different types of children who are born with Midos problems, and included within them are B'nai Asnua and B'nai Grushas Halev. So what's Grushas Halev? So says the Ryan, Grushas Halev is Shagama Belibo Ligarsha. That the husband has already made up in his mind that he wants to divorce her. So the question is, what if he hasn't made up in his mind that he wants to divorce her, but a couple is having really serious marital difficulties and he really hates her? He hates her, but he's not in a rush to get rid of her, but he really has terrible feelings towards her. So the Ron indicates that the category of B'nai Sinua is only a problematic category if through the hatred that the husband has for his wife, he has in his mind another woman when he's with his wife. He says, "B'nei snua shesayno mitokach noisin daito alisha acheres." However, the Rosh says, "B'nei snua" means that afa pisha ain't bilibo legarsha. Even though he doesn't have in mind to divorce her, but he just hates her, that is itself a sufficient reason why relations would be problematic, at least in terms of the children who would be born from that relationship. It would seem even if his mind was not necessarily upon another woman at the time that he has relations with his wife. So this is, of course, a consideration when dealing with couples who are going through marital strife. Is there a period in time in which relations become prohibited to that couple simply because divorce is on the horizon, that it is anticipated that by the husband that he's planning to give his wife a divorce? So this is one of the first topics covered in the Shulchan Aruch at the beginning of Hilchos Gerushin in Simen Kuf Yutes. Lo tiyeh Yosheves Tachtav is a sif base. Lo tiyeh Yosheves Tachtav Mishamashta V'dayto L'garsha. That it is improper for the man to allow relations to continue in his marriage when he has in mind to divorce his wife. So the Chelkas Mechokek argues this is only if he's actually going to have relations with his wife. But if he's not going to have relations with his wife, then there is no iser in continuing to live with her in a husband-wife relationship. The Pri Chadosh qualifies this and says that to the extent that may be true, we would have to broaden the definition of the word umishamashto. That just like it's improper for him to have allowed to accept her intimacy, which is predicated upon a false notion of security, it also is improper for him to accept any other services that she may provide, such as cooking meals for him and making his bed, pouring his cup of wine, and other types of services that a wife would typically provide for a husband. Once he knows that he wants to divorce her, that would be improper as well. And the Beis Shmuel goes further and says that he's not that he thinks that since we have two separate Gemaras, there's the Gemara Nedarim that quotes from a pasuk in I didn't quote the pasuk, but the pasuk was from Yechezkel, talking about those who rebel And he says that the people who are rebellious against their wives, that they, and those are the nine types of children with bad midos. Since that Gemara seems to be talking about one who has relations with his wife when he's planning to divorce him, it says B'nai Grusha Salev, then the Gemara in Gittin is presumably talking about even when he's not having relations with her. And one can argue, he says, that even if he's not going to have relations with her, it's improper to remain for a moment in a marital relationship when one is planning to divorce his wife without finalizing the divorce. It's just improper even to what is violating an isser, even by continuing the marriage when one is planning on the side he's planning to effectuate a divorce with his partner. Now, the Chachma Shlomo points out, though, that if you think about it, we have to revisit this entire issue in the post Rabbeinu Gershom Ira. Because in the post Rabbeinu Gershom Ira, says the Chachma Shlomo, the very beginning, that's only when the husband had the wherewithal to divorce his wife against the will. As kiman the yachol the garsha ksiv kisane shalech. So then it's considered v'yachol l'shalcha, that it's considered to be improper when he's supposed to get rid of her because he hates her, to keep her in the marriage. L'kach osu l'achzika, that's why he can't remain in the marriage. V'daitu l'garsha, well, b'zman hazeh, she ainu yachol l'garsha ba'al korcha, but now that you can't divorce your wife against her will, imkenim be'emes sonei oisa ma'yish l'asos, kimen she'ainu yachol l'garsha. What do you want him to do? And then he goes on to say that it would, therefore he maintains both an obligation towards his wife and an obligation towards himself, that he wouldn't be able to have since he's stuck with her anyway, if she doesn't want to accept the divorce, so then he would not be able to fulfill his conjugal obligations towards his wife if he didn't have relations with her, and it would also would be unhealthy for him as well. So this is a very tricky and delicate balance when you have couples that are going through marital difficulties in terms of considering this particular shiloh. But at the very least, what it suggests is that given that we live in a context in which divorce really needs to be consensual on some level, then there's always a consensual understanding basically to the marriage relationship. Neither party has the full ability to be able to act unilaterally in terms of ending the relationship. So therefore, almost you can argue a contract with the parties that even when they're going through difficult times, if there is a determination that somebody wants to do a get, they're not going to be able to do it without discussing it with the other party first. So that discussion would be an appropriate discussion to have. If the discussion has not taken place, there's an assumption at least of consensus. The reality is that if though one really does have an intention in his mind of divorcing his wife and holds it from his wife and engages in relations, it would seem that despite the fact that there's nothing that he could do to end the relationship, a duty of disclosure, at the very least, in terms of what a person's plans are, might be appropriate. And then the parties on their own could consent to attempt a reconciliation with each other. But there should always be at least a full disclosure of intentions between parties. There is no isser per se. Once parties have discussed their intentions to try to go for marriage counseling or to try to affect shalom bayis, and through that to have relations with each other, the real problem is a withholding of information. But if information, in fact, has not yet been shared, then in many cases it's because a person has not necessarily come to a complete achrota. Yes?
Is there a halakhic requirement to separate at that point if one has decided they want a divorce?
So the nowadays, since everything is consensual, it really becomes a discussion between the couple. And this already lends to itself more to the pastoral side of the Gittin Shaila. And I'd like to focus for this session more on the halakha considerations, so that even from a pastoral perspective, a Rav is familiar with all of the halakhic considerations. But there is no isser for a couple fully informed of the thought processes of the other to engage in an attempt at reconciliation. The marital bond is not considered to be broken, and there would not be an issa for the parties to mutually consent to have relations with each other in efforts at reconciliation. Okay. Yes.
I'm sorry. If a couple is given a psak from Beis Din to try to reconcile things, but they claim that they're bari, that they want to end the relationship. Because of their claim of bari, is it coming upon them to separate, even though Beis Din claims they should try to reconcile?
It's very difficult for Beis Din to paskin on somebody's emotions. You can't paskin love for somebody else. And the issues that arise from B'nai Snua, B'nai Meriva, B'nai Gusha Saleh, are issues that only Adam Yodea, you know, Maris Nadlev, an Afsho, a person knows, you know, his own heart. So there's only so much that a Beis Din can do in terms of making these types of recommendations. As we see from, you know, the tshuva of the Tzitz Eliezer, there is a certain understanding of an obligation that a person assumes when they enter into a marriage to give it a certain amount of effort. There's used to be a period of time that would say chai chadashim, 18 months, you know, that Bat Din would paskin as a matter of course to try to go for mediation, to try to go for counseling, to see if things could work out. Nowadays, we recognize that you can identify certain situations as irreconcilable, and certainly the halacha is that when both parties consent that they want to get divorced, they have the right to get divorced. The halacha does not require for outside permission for a couple to get divorced if both sides want to get divorced. The real problematic case is when one side wants a divorce and the other side doesn't want a divorce, and then a Beis Din may say, well, you can attempt a certain amount of reconciliation. To require somebody to engage in an actual conjugal relationship is something I think that is beyond the domain. Because you can't... that's something that relationship by itself requires consent. When it doesn't matter that people are married, no, a person does not have a right to, as the Gemara in Baba Kama says, to rape his wife. So therefore, by definition, that's going to require consent. Now, the next vexing part of the equation for the contemporary rabbi is the question of, okay, so now we know that a get is appropriate. Both parties have consented, or this is, you know, the appropriate thing to do because they hate each other. The husband, hates his wife. She sitikha tafshila. We found that there are adequate grounds, okay, for him to, so we're going to allow him in this case to divorce. So she still has to consent, ultimately. But, or the wife says, I find my husband to be disgusting. Even though we don't force a get, so we would encourage a get, or there are cases where the wife, as we'll see, can force a get, or there's nothing wrong at all with the relationship, but the parties on their own have decided that they want to get divorced, even though maybe we prevailed upon them that it's not so good for them. But let's say now they come for the divorce, and now there's a question, when should the get be given? Should the get be given at the beginning of the divorce process, or should the get be given at the end of the divorce process? Because divorce, apipashis, is krisis, sefer krisis. Krisis implies that they're completely severing the relationship. So apipashis, the most preferable thing would be that all aspects of the relationship have been severed at the time that the get is given, and whatever monetary issues they have to resolve have already been resolved. Everything is resolved. All that's left is the get is given, it's gone, it's finished, they're done, and they never have to deal with each other again. That's one consideration. Second consideration is that you don't want anyone to claim that the get was given under false pretenses. If they still have issues they need to be resolved, you may have to worry that the husband will say, had I known that the issue would be resolved a certain way, it wouldn't run in my favor, I never would have given a get. And you have to worry about get mutah. We know the Gemara paskins that a chalita mutas is kasheva, but a get mutah is puzzle. You can't have that it would cast a question on the validity of the get if the husband claims that it was given under false expectations. So the in the Seder, a get, it's quoted that the in Pei Aleph, the Ramah quotes, in Sif Pei Aleph in the Seder, a get, that typically one part of the get ritual, right before the get is given over, the Rav says, are you looking to collect the ksuva? So the wife usually says no, especially nowadays when the couples generally settle their finances through lawyers or through some monetary settlement. There's no specific claim made on the ksuva. Or she should forgive the ksuva. So there shouldn't be any fights. Machmas ksuva. So this is from the Mari Mintz. The Mari Mintz says that we're worried that if we don't smooth these things over, then settle the ksuva at the time of the get. The husband would say that maybe, had I known that she was going to ask for a ksuva, I never would have divorced her in the first place. So the post can point out this is almost a kal vachomer with respect to other monetary claims. If this is true with respect to the ksuva, where she has the right to collect the ksuva, nobody would deny that this is something which is an absolute prerequisite of marriage. Man can live with his wife for 1 minute without a ksuva. So certainly she has the right to claim the ksuva. And nonetheless, we're worried that he could say, had I known she would collect the ksuva, I never would have given the get. So kal vachomer, and when it comes to other monetary claims, and who even knew that she had the right to such claims or that she would advance such claims, that they should be settled, that they should be settled beforehand. So the question is, what if you can simply provide that in the event that these matters haven't been settled beforehand, that there's simply a clear articulation that everyone understands that these matters will be settled afterwards, and then it won't be pogay on the get. It won't be pogame the get. So this is one possible mahalech that is not necessarily contradictory to the spirit of the what is pronounced by the Mahari Mintz, that you should clarify these matters beforehand. It doesn't mean that the wife has to be mochel saksuva. Typically that's what happens, because matters get settled through other means. But if in fact she has a claim with respect to the ksuva, so she has the right to say, so I'm not mochel saksuva, but then it should just be made clear by the Masada get that even though she may make the claim afterwards, that it will not harm the validity of the get at all. And presumably that's something which could be applied to other inyanim. So this question is interesting. If you look in the Menashe Klein, the Mishnah Halachos was asked by a rav in Brooklyn by the name of Rabbi Alman, from the Young Israel of Flatbush, okay, about maybe we can reverse the order. Maybe it's nowadays we can have the get done first, have the get done, and then so that the woman would not be subject to the issue of becoming an agun, and then afterwards we'll have the didei mamonah settled after the get is actually given. And this is really a relevant consideration bizman hazeh, particularly given that that we have an aguna problem of men refusing to give get into their wives. And if we're worried that the fellow might let the more negative part of his personality get the best of him, that's more likely to happen down the road when the divorce doesn't go so well, where he sees that the monetary judgment is against him. So then he might try to use the get as a bargaining chip, as a tool for extortion. So in order to prevent these types of problems, it has been suggested that maybe it would be better off to do the get first and then do other aspects of the divorce afterwards. So says Rav Menashe Klein, he says, given that we have halachos that we even have put in cherem or makos, different shitos, if a husband and wife come together to Bezdin afterwards. We don't want them to be together afterwards. This almost dooms them to have to be together afterwards. So therefore, he quotes the Mara, the Seder Aget, the statement of the Mara Mitz, that the whole idea of asking her to forgive her ksuva or to make sure this ksuva has been settled is that they should not be kshurim b'diachad b'shum davar, that they should not have any kind of connection with each other afterwards. And therefore, Mimela Korchuk, this is the very end of the tshuva, should start with Sadr Koldar Shechayshim Baal Ishlaitzim B'dayonim. Any type of matter that's going to go for litigation should be resolved beforehand. Shehakol Yisuda Kodem Hagerishin. The Lokum Minig America, Bavano Seno Harabim, he adds, Shalachar Get Maskin Lisdayin Zayim Zen. Not like Minig America, you do the get first, then you have the Dine Monas afterwards. And then he throws in, of course, that there's also the possibility that one of them will run to a secular court, which will be a separatist, or now at least you have the get at the end of the process. Maybe that would be more encouraging that the parties should come to Bezdin. So even he, if you look at the tshuva carefully, allows for the circumstance where maybe certain matters that haven't been taken care of can be settled through the assistance of third parties. Look, lawyers can be third parties too, right? His main objection is if they have to be together anywhere, if they have to be together for continuing litigation and the like. And this is really perhaps a standard, you know, objection based on what might, in ideal circumstances, you know, be preferred. But the question is whether maybe Bizman Hazeh, given the concerns about Aguna, whether there is something in Rabbi Alman's question, and whether the order really should be reversed. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a couple of tshuvas on this general subject. So did they make it to the Mara Mekomos? What? Pages 12 and 13 in the Mara Mekomos. In which basically, if you look in, which tshuva did I want to, if you look in the tshuva in Kuftes Zion, on page 15, he has a case there where he worked on a din Torah for a couple that was getting divorced somewhere in Toronto. And then afterwards, after there had been all kinds of assurances, apparently, that the woman wouldn't file a separate action for divorce and that all the matters had been settled, so the woman went ahead and she filed a separate action for divorce. So in the second paragraph, he says, so he's talking about the woman's father. He's asking for extra money. And he does not cooperating in the civil divorce, I think, in that they had agreed to do elsewhere, that they had agreed to do in New York, was it? And then he says that... It's better to the woman and her father, better for you to be quiet than to speak up, because you're going to cast aspersions on the get, as the Gemara and Gittin has such a case. This is why we don't allow for any tvias after the gerishing. So that the Baal won't be able to say that that Amanas Kane, that through this I did not intend to divorce you. And if you look in page 14, Simon Kuftes Vav, about 12 lines in the bottom, me high time a kol tvios mamon. All the tvios that could possibly exist, Shemiyesh is a chiluk minei mispashul kacha, who owed me kol shekei me aksuva, that they certainly should be resolved beforehand. Shaiq was at time the Ramah, Vyama Baal, I mean, they were worried that Hosea Manaskein lo gersha, And Mamela, Ika Chazaka Shasukena Bezak or Bezan Shirbi Oyla Ishmaab Sheshbiyah the Shtasakhayuvim, and therefore nobody is going to pay attention if she makes any further claims after the get, because the understanding is that everything was already resolved. Once there has been a get, then there should be an understanding that there are no further tefios, and go on to the carryover paragraph on page 15. The get itself is kind of an indication that the Baal does no further obligations. And if she then went off to secular court, you'd have to worry about the lies that the Baal will say that Amanas Kain Lo Girsha, that he did not intend to divorce her had he known about the further claims. So Ramosha also seems to go along with the basic preference, shall we say, that all matters should be resolved before the get is given. On the other hand, Rabbi Jachter, in his article about Sidur Aget Bizman Hazeh in New York, quotes from Rav Henkin. This is on page 221 of the article. It's page 18 of the Maror Mekomos. The last paragraph on that page. He quotes first the Aruch HaShulchan. Okay, so we'll quote the Aruch HaShulchan from the article. The Aruch HaShulchan notes that it could be that maybe not all claims have already been resolved. So if not all claims have already been resolved, then, says the Aruch HaShulchan, you just have to then make it very clear, Yodia la'abash lo yezeh shum shaykos klal leget v'shim afilo tekayim en get nisha b'tokfo, that you can still make the get work. It's just a question of spelling it out. In other words, there is no iser per se in terms of resolving the monetary issues after the get. The real concern is that the husband is going to claim that Amanaske and he did not give the get. And as long as it is spelled out that there are remaining issues, but that regardless of how those issues are resolved, the get will remain in full force, then you need not worry about the fact that there are still some remaining monetary issues to be resolved. Granted, they have to be resolved in a proper atmosphere where you don't have yichud problems and the like of the husband and the wife, but it is halachically possible to take care of those issues afterwards. And then he quotes from Rav Henkin, and this is very important, who says she yesh lako mishayres es atar shel habei shechayshim shege pashin mazik lahad divorce. That we have to eradicate the mistaken premise that many think that doing the get before the divorce somehow is going to harm the divorce, or she also beside the get pashin kodim divorce, or that there is any iser in doing the get before the divorce is finalized, that it is okay for a couple to be completely divorced according to Jewish law, even though they might, in the eyes of the secular government, still be considered to be civilly married, and even though it could be that not everything has been resolved from a civil perspective, Rabbi Akiva Eger also writes about this at an earlier date, Nechelik base Simon Pei Gimel, a tshuva I didn't copy in the materials, with a similar sentiment, as long as it is clear to the parties that there's no shiur in the get, and that from the standpoint of halacha, they are 100% considered to be completely divorced. So here too, this is a statement that Rav Melech used to make as well, that when he started being Masad the Gittin, he used to always be makpid to follow Rav Moshe. And this general principle that it's better and preferable to resolve all monetary matters prior to the giving of the get, that there be a complete, that there be no kesher anymore in any sense whatsoever, secular or otherwise, between the husband and the wife. But when, over the years, he saw the number of cases where a husband would disappear, where the animosity would build, and then a get would be withheld altogether, then he changed his tune and came to the position that given the society that we live in, it is much better to do the get as soon as possible once a couple knows, once it's clear that they're going to be divorced, rather than to delay the get until the end, because there is too many times that we have seen in our experience at the best in how delaying the giving of a get could cause a woman to be an aguna altogether. I'll give you one example. There was a sad case, was it at our bezin, in a different bezin, where the get was written. husband came in to write the get, basically all matters had been resolved, but just hadn't been, you know, put in the, hadn't been signed and sealed, shall we say. And it was decided he would come in and give the get, but then the sofer made a mistake in the get, so the get needed to be rewritten. But it was already late, and the sofer was tired, so the sofer didn't want to write the get again, and they decided they would go home, and first thing the next morning, they would come and they would write the get again. In the meantime, that evening, the husband spoke to some of his cronies, and he was complaining about the custody arrangements for the children and the divorce in general, and his cronies said to him, "Hey, we have a great idea. Why are you running to do the get? Why don't you hold back the get and refuse to give the get until the custody arrangements are changed to your satisfaction? And that way, you'll be able to win out, you know, on the custody issue." And the husband then called back and said, "I'm not coming in tomorrow morning. I'm holding back the get until all the custody arrangements are changed." And as of a few years later, a get had still not been given. So in order to, and this is one marshal out of many that could probably be marshaled along these directions. And therefore, the better practice that has been concluded by the Beis Din of America, at least, is that once it is known that a couple is going to get divorced, the get it is better to do the get up front before dealing with the other issues. So when the a case comes into the Beis Din, in which the Beis Din is going to talk about when the Beis Din is going to deal with all of the issues, all of the monetary issues as well, the practice of the Beis Din is that the first order of business is to do the get, and then afterwards to adjudicate all of the other issues. In this way, you prevent the possibility of the get being used as a bargaining chip later on in the process or as a tool for extortion or negotiation. Yes?
Why not just have a kisbut new or other things like that? Have the get given, but the tour withheld, something like that, to be yotzing the Rav Moshe and the other Rav Nachman.
Rav Moshe himself did not require that a get be given at the end. He just said that that's the general expectation and understanding. So as long as it's spelled out that the get is not conditional upon, you know, further further claims, then that should not be problematic. In fact, Rav Moshe himself talks about a case where the Siman Lamed Zayin of Evan Ezer Chela Gimel, where the wife took her husband to our coast, to the courts, after the get was completed with various claims. And there was, although the husband did not want her to do that at the time that the get was given, he did not specifically stipulate that he was giving the get only based on the understanding that she was not going to bring any claims. And Rav Moshe writes that since it was known to everybody that this chashash existed, because basically I think they had run to Mexico for a quick divorce in Mexico, but the couple lived in Toronto, and it was known that Toronto would not recognize the Mexico divorces, so the husband could reasonably have inferred that there was a possibility that the wife would make further claims, whether or not halakhically it was appropriate for her to do so in secular court or not. Nonetheless, since he should have been aware of this possibility, the fact that there are additional claims made down the road does not impair the validity of the get, and the get would still be considered to be valid. Now, you do have to contrast this with the tshuva that Rav Moshe writes about in Siman Kuf Tes Zayin, where he sat in a case where there was a very clear case where the husband made it crystal clear that he was giving the get only based on the assumption that there would be no further claims made by the wife, and then afterwards, in violation of that very clear stipulation, the wife's father asked for $1,000. So in this particular case, Moshe writes that Ulai Yisvatel Aged Chos V'Shol Mishum Shenach Misadish Lenosan Aged Lemitzadev Tachtanu, because he says it's we made a promise, we made a direct promise to the husband that he would be able to get his divorce decree where he had filed, and that the husband and that the wife's father would not prevent him from being able to finish the process, and he violated this explicit promise that was made to the husband, so then he would worry about a get mutter in those circumstances. So how do you distinguish Rav Moshe's tshuva in Chela Dalet Siman Kuf Tes Zayin with his tshuva and Chela Gimel Siman Lamed Zayin? You have to say that the distinction is in terms of the amount that the that there is a direct linkage made by the husband in terms of his giving of the get, and some sort of promise that it is predicated upon that the that the get will not be followed by further claims. But as long as you're living in a society where everybody understands that there is, or in a community where everybody understands that there is the possibility of bringing the further claims, then you can't really argue that it's a get mutah based on the fact that a get has already been given. And you need to understand also, and I'll just say this once, but clearly, that until a get is actually handed to the woman, it is not final. Okay. Yes.
If the husband gives a get before everything is resolved, and then things are resolved not to satisfaction, isn't there a pashat? Why wouldn't there be a problem with a snafu lakanya kind of a thing? In other words, that he only gave the get because he was so sure that it was going to turn out a certain way. And when it didn't turn out a certain way, and there was because the arrangements were, he was sure that the courts would rule in his favor.
These have to do with issues of Tanai and the like. He's not making any Tanai. If anything, it might be issue related to the issue of Dvar Mishabalei. And when do we say that there's an Umdan or the Muchach? But he's not making any Tanai. He's not. He's just giving a get, without any Tanai whatsoever. But we just Lieser Se'es. In a way, the Marimitz is really Lieser Se'es. So there shouldn't even be the possibility of lies of his claiming that it wasn't, it was based on false pretenses because he didn't expect anything else. So we cover ourselves. But Lamai said the fact that the get is given Bali Tanai is essentially the strongest rationale as to why we don't have to worry. It's just in Ramosha's case in Chelek Dal Simkov Tezai, and he said it seemed like on Zila. Some mediation panel, a Bezin panel, he was involved with a case where there was an explicit statement that was made to the husband that something wouldn't happen. So if it's made as an explicit promise to the husband, so then that's already removes it from the domain of Dvarim Shebalev and makes it a much more serious issue. So one has to be careful about these types of promises and the like. Which is why Batei Din are very careful when a get is actually done to really emphasize how this is not based upon any tanai whatsoever. I mean, the Piskei Tshuva has a case of where the husband was running off to some foreign land and where he made the wife agree that she would escrow the amount of the amount of the ksuva that. It would be escrowed away with somebody else because he was worried about her taking this amount so that it should be escrowed away. So she escrowed it away and he gave the get, and then she said to the escrow person, okay, I'll take the money now. So then the husband argued that the get should be deemed possible because he had made it very clear that this was a tanai. So I think that the Piskei Tshuva quotes, I'm trying to remember who it was at the Torah's Gittin, I have to find it. It was in Simen Kuf Lamed Daled. It's in the materials. One second, I'll find it for you so I can quote this correctly. I'm sorry?
This case on the Seder Haget is about the same.
It's in the Seder Haget. Okay, so here, let me. Okay, so it's page 9. So this is the Maharam Al-Sheikh. So the Maharam Al-Sheikh has this in Sif Lamed Bav, where he wrote that if the woman will be tashlish the shtar ksubasa, so that she won't have to worry about her collecting it, that was the case, then he would give the get. So she was tashlish it, and then she gave him odah, basically, that she's only doing this machmas onis, that because she has no choice, because otherwise she'll be an aguna. And then afterwards, after she received the get without any tanai, then she asked to collect the ksuba. So the Baal says, I didn't divorce her on that basis. So says the Maram Al-Sheikh that you can dismiss the Taina of the Baal because number one, the Baal didn't mention it at the time that he gave the get. Number two, the woman really was subject to an onus because he was running away. And therefore, he should have realized that it was possible for her to come up with this chokhmah, that she would, he asked her to be tashrish to shak suvah, so he didn't give a time limit, so she did it, but he should have realized that just like he put her in a tough spot, she might try to do something to put him in a tough spot. It might be mesim odah, and make a and arrange for her the ability to be able to collect the ksuva afterwards, and he should have realized when he gave the get that there was this possibility, and if he wanted this to be the get to be subject to this tanai, then he should have made a tanai at the time that he gave the get. But since he didn't make the tanai at the time he gave the get, so therefore he's mekel. So we see that there is among the poskim tremendous flexibility, certainly when it comes to this issue. If you take that tshuva as a sample example. Okay, so now we've determined that a get can be done. It's appropriate for a get to be done. I gave in your materials also the Binyan Sion also talks about the issue of the issue of the timing of having other disputes basically dealt with at a later point in time, and he also basically provides for various ha'aros in which he makes a similar argument that unless it is actually stipulated she'amanas kein hu megaresh lo yachol lekalkul acharkach, that if he does not actually say that his gerushin is dependent upon no further claims or anything else, then there might be a laz, but the laz wouldn't be enough to be mevatel the get. So while he says that one shouldn't necessarily always rely upon that, he says that those haroitze lismach adaito lahakel yimsa smicha ktsas, that those who mishalibo v'chaver v'oya kilkulim v'chidu laget, if you see that there are pitfalls in withholding a get before everything is resolved, and you want to be mekel based on these types of considerations, then he was trying to provide for an argument that one could, in fact, find grounds at least to be mekel, despite the fact that there were certain monetary matters that had not yet been completely resolved. And he brings raya's from the Gemara in Gittin on Daf Mem Hey, but a Moshe Shishto Leyakse, where it appears from that Gemara that we're not really worried about the get being invalid, absent the case where the husband says at the time of the gerushin that he is divorcing her amanaskein hu megaresh based on certain expectations. This is a very important halacha lemaisa issue because it has become much more prevalent bisman hazeh to do the get prior to the resolution of all issues relating to the marriage. It's a tremendous takana in terms of preventing aguna situations. And ultimately, it's been the official policy of the Bezdin of America with respect to cases that come to the Bezdin for full-fledged adjudication. And it's basically endorsed as well. If you look at Rabbi Jachter's quotation from Rav Henkin, it appears to be endorsed by Rav Henkin, and also is the practice that was endorsed by Rav Melech after years of being Masad the Gittin and realizing that this would be a better practice to prevent aguna situations. In terms of addressing the concern of the husband being able to claim get muta and the like, then the best way to address that concern is consistent with the Mari Mintz at the time that the get is given, to make it clear to the couple that whether or not, that even if they're not happy with how the monetary settlements are ultimately conducted, that will not impair the validity of the get. Now, in terms of the actual get ritual before the Beis Din, I'd encourage you to read through Rabbi Jachter's article where he talks about just the different parts of the process of interviewing the couple and writing the get and the signing of the edim and what questions we ask the husband and what questions we ask the wife. But basically what I included in my materials is the standard Seder HaGet, which is the text that is used in by our Beis Din. It's based on the question and answer format of the Kav Noki. The Kav Noki really is the most famous handbook providing for the questions and answers that are part of the get process. And this Seder HaGet is essentially in many ways just an English translation of the Seder HaGet of the Kav Noki. As you can see, if you go move to page 25, The Seder Aget begins with the fundamental question of whether the husband is agreeing to give a get to his wife of his own free will without compulsion and unconditionally. And that really is the main type of statement of assurance that is required from the husband, that the get is bli onus, that it's not going to be problematic as a get me'usa. A get me'usa is possible, that get has to be given by the husband. How do we know a get has to be given of his own free will? Because the Torah says one different shitas. One shita is based on the cost of law, because the cost of law implies midaito, the cost of that he's writing it midaito of his own volition. And the Rambam quotes v'ayoyim lo sim tzolchein beinam. The Rambam says that since the giving of the get is preceded by the phrase v'ayoyim lo sim tzolchein beinam, the impression is that this is a determination that the husband has made to give a get, as opposed to a determination that is imposed upon the husband. So then there's a hataras nedarim, basically, in order that there not be even the appearance of a get being given through extraneous reasons, that the husband's only giving it to release himself from a vow or an oath, or because he made a vow or an oath, then we do hataras the darim on any vows or any oaths, and the Bezin says mutalach, and that's page 1. Then page 2 is basically what's called bitul modos, that as we mentioned, the case of the Maram Alshech, that the woman in that case did what her husband's bidding. He said, be mashish seksuva with somebody else, so she was, but she was mesim modah, that I'm only doing this machmas onus. So we're worried that a husband might come and be mason modai, might go in front of a couple of edim and say, I'm only giving the get machmas onus, but I'm not going to tell that to the bezdin. So therefore, we haven't been mevatel all modaos, and that's basically page 2 of the Seder Aget, is the bitul modaos of the husband. Then page 3 is the sofer hands the husband the writing materials, because it says the cost of law, which means that the husband has the right to get. So the writing materials have to belong to the husband. So the practice nowadays is that the sofer presents the writing materials to the husband as an absolute gift. Now this is relevant to the question of how do the writing materials become the husband's, and who has to pay for the get. So the Gemara and the end of Baba Basra talks about this issue, and there basically is an understanding, and the Gemara and Gittin also touches upon it, that either the husband or the wife pays for the get, but that it belongs to the husband. If the wife pays for the get, what does it mean pays for the get? She pays for the sofer. She pays the sofer so that the writing material should then belong to the husband. So how does it belong to the husband? So there's an assumption that there is a takana that when the wife pays, so with her money, we are makning the materials to the husband. So this was a special takana that was made with respect to the wife. Now, is this an obligation? Once we say that we made this takana, why do we make this takana? Because we're worried if we're waiting for the husband to pay, maybe the husband will never pay, and therefore maybe the wife will never get divorced. Therefore, we allow the wife to pay and say the materials then belong to the husband by virtue of the wife paying for the writing materials for the get. Does that mean that we require, as a matter of course, that the wife has to pay? So this is a machlokes between the Rambam and the Rambam and the Rosh. It's quoted by the Beis Shmuel and Simon Kof Chof Sif Beis. Basically, the Rambam holds that once there's a takana, that when the woman pays, it's considered to be in the domain, the writing materials are considered in the domain of the husband, then that means that the wife has to pay. And the Rosh says, no, it means that the wife can pay, that if the husband refuses to pay, and the get will still be kosher. Lamai says, the Minchas Yitzchak points out in the tshuva that I attached to the Mara Mekomos in Chelek Aleph Simon Mem Beis, that the practice nowadays is basically different because the Bez, I think it's you put it towards the end of the materials, page 100 and 101. Basically, the Bezdin now pays the sofer. What happens? Either the husband or the wife pays the Bezdin, and the Bezdin pays the schar sofer. So, does it really make such a big difference? Bismana Zen. Others have pointed out Maybe it doesn't make such a big difference with Manazer for another reason, that the writing materials don't really cost too much. So fair is, yeah, I mean, he's getting paid for his time, whatever, his expertise. But the sofer is the writing materials that have to belong to the husband nowadays cost, I don't know, a few pennies. It's not a significant cost. The sofer very happily gives it to the husband, and it's an absolute gift, so maybe it doesn't really matter who pays. So it happens that Torah's Gittin, it takes this halakha very seriously of who pays, to the degree that he says that if the payment would not be made by the husband or the wife, but would be made, let's say, by a third party, an aguna organization steps up and says that anybody who does a get today, we're going to pay. Anybody who, or for this particular case, we're gonna pay for it, and it's not paid by the husband or the wife. So is that also okay? Is that problematic, given that there was no special takanas chazal, that the writing materials would then be considered to be acquired through this third party on behalf of the husband? So the Torah's Gittin is very strict and says that he's worried that the get might not be kosher altogether if there isn't a specific acquisition made on behalf of the husband for the writing from the monies that were paid by third parties, so that the writing materials can be deemed to belong to the husband. So this is a question halacha lemaaseh that Tzemach Tzedek disagrees with the Torah's Gittin, and the Minchas Yitzchak basically in his Simen Mem Beis in Chelek Aleph quotes the Tzemach Tzedek and essentially. Says as follows that look in Sif Beis on page 100 from the Tzemach Tzedek. Kimet she'akshav noigin she'soifem makne l'ba'al klaf edio. Nowadays we have an explicit giving over, as we just saw in the Seder Haget, right? The sofer to husband, you husband, I am presenting to you as an absolute gift this paper, ink, inkwell, pen, and other writing materials to become your property, right? Ramban says the Gemara would never ask the question about the problem when a woman pays for the get, that really she's causing the get to be written, if in fact there is a direct giving over by the sofer of the writing materials to the husband, because then clearly it belongs to the husband, because the sofer is giving it to the husband. The get obviously belongs to the baal, because the sofer is giving it to the husband. And it's clearly written with the husband's writing materials, so according to that, you don't have to worry if it is written if it is paid for by other parties. And then says the Minchas Yitzchak another snip lahakel that when it is clear that parties are paying the money for purposes of a kosher get, because what would be the purpose of an aguna advocate or a father-in-law or rabbi from his stock of funds or whatever else to be paying for the get, if not for the fact that they wanted it to be a kosher get? So just like we say in other areas of halacha, that when people want something to be kosher, they have in mind whatever acquisitions need to take place to be deemed to have been taken place in order for the ritual to be kosher. So too, we mekavnim ba'isu inyan shiyoilu agerishin. Obviously, everybody has in mind that the monies should be for the purpose of coming from the husband, if that is how it needs to be categorized, in order that the get be completely viewed as a kosher get. So therefore, the Minchas Yitzchak thinks that you can also throw in that consideration as well with respect to the Svara as to why it does not appear that people are so worried about this the Shaila Bizman Hazeh. Not that it doesn't hurt to, to be makne mamish, like as is suggested by the Torah's Gittin, but he says that He says, "Mikol Malkom im Efshel Tzeis Kodes Lazakas Lo Beperish Bevadei Odef." You could do it in actual Sechiyah of the Kesef Bevadei Odef. But he says, certainly there are all these considerations to be Miyayshev the Minhag Olam, not to worry. He says, particularly given that the nowadays essentially the Beis Din pays the Sofer, and the Sofer is paying and the Sofer is just giving over as an absolute gift the writing materials, and you can also throw in the fact that the writing materials are pretty inconsequential in terms of their value, in terms of their value bizman hazeh. Now, the next question that arises is the question as to whether you need a Beis Din altogether with respect to the get process. We talk about going to the Beis Din, going to the Beis Din of America. On the other hand, we also talk about Sonar Rabbanim Chashuvim, who do Gittin, and do they really have the Din of Beis Din? So if you look in Shulchan Aruch, you don't really find anywhere any mention, you don't find in the Gemara anywhere, any mention that the get has to be done in front of a Beis Din. It appears that we say that for a Geirus, right, that Mi'emer, that a person is going to find three men to do a Geirus, but we don't find with respect to a get that Mi'emer you're going to have to that you're going to find the Beis Din to be able to do a get. So the Gemara in Kiddushin. So you don't find any assumption necessarily that a get needs to be given. Nonetheless, the Or Zeruah seems to assume that a Beis Din does require a get. He paskins a get really shouldn't be done b'layla because it's done maladin. On that basis, the Noda Yehuda talks about how the it could be that all gittin require a bezdin of shalosh, and what would really be the basis? So there's a Rashi at the beginning of Sanhedrin that says that when the Mishnah said the beginning of Sanhedrin says the miyun requires gimel. Miyunin requires, what's a miyun? Miyun is a girl who's a katana, who's married off not by her father, then she'd be married midoraisa. So she's married off by her mother and her brother. So it's only kiddushin to rabbanan. So she has the right to nullify this kiddushin by saying, I don't like this this boy that you gave me, I don't like this fellow, and I want a I want out, and she doesn't require a get. She just has to do this miyun, and miyun requires three dayanim. So why does it require three dayanim? So says the Rashi, because ke'en daraisa tikun, because it's the done like ke'en daraisa. So says another reader, what's the ke'en daraisa? A get. It must be. What's a miyun? A miyun is kind of like the rabbanan form of a get for a woman who's not really married. She's only married me to rabbanan. She requires a miyun. What's the daraisa? That daraisa is that as a woman who's really married me daraisa. So what does she require? She requires a get. So it must be that Rashi is working with the assumption that get sarachosh, that the get requires three. Others say, no, maybe the Kain Daraisa, the Rashi is talking about as a chalitza. How is chalitza like miyun? Because the act of chalitza essentially comes from the woman. She takes off the brother-in-law's shoe and throws it. Just like by miyun, the act comes from the girl that she declares that I don't, Amitson and the Yosemite said that I don't want to be, whatever the formulation, I don't want to be with this particular man. So that's a question. Api Pashtus, there's no real solid source. You look in the various mikoros that should require a Beis Din per se for a get, other than the Gemara at the end of Gittin on Daf Pei Ches Amid Beis. It talks about a Gemba Usa where Abaye approaches Rav Yosef and says, on what basis nowadays are we able to be kofa, our husband, in those cases where kapia is appropriate? How could we be kofa? We don't have mumchen, you require dayan and mumchen. So he says, well, even though we don't have dayan and mumchen, or we require dayan of Meretz Yisrael, we don't have mumchen in the Kutzlar, so he says, shikusayo ka abdinan. And Tosa says that nowadays we say shikusayo the kamai ka abdinan, that we're the substitute dayanim for the mumchen who were in Eretz Yisrael of yesteryear. So that Gemara clearly indicates that to make a psak din, to convene and make a psak din, that a get must be, can be given even against the free will of the husband. And we'll discuss later on, I suppose next week, about exactly how that works for myself. That requires a Beis Din. So some say that maybe even if you interpret Rashi as talking about a get, so he's talking about a get bal korcho of the husband. So a get bal korcho of the husband absolutely requires a Beis Din. So the Ksam Sofer disagrees with Noda Biyuda and says that he doesn't think that a get requires a bezin at all. Because all these the reasons, it doesn't appear to be a solid source really anywhere to require a get b'shlosha, other than a get where you require kfiya of the Baal. But he says that for a different reason, he thinks that there was always a hiddur to have a bezin shlosha, and that was that you require that there are certain questions that are asked of the Edom. When the Edom sign the get, so after the get is over, they're asked, did you sign the get, l'shma, l'shem gerishin? Did you sign the get, l'shma, l'shem gerishin? What did you say when you signed the get? What did you hear the sofer say that he was writing the get, l'shma, l'shem gerishin? Were you there when the sofer wrote the get? And all of these questions that the Edom are answering, so all these answers, to register these answers properly, you need a Kabbalah Seder. And Kabbalah Seder requires a Bezin. So he says, since for the various questions that we're going to ask the Sofer and the Edim at the end of the get process, we require a Kabbalah Seder, so that's going to require a full-fledged Bezin. So that's why there's a practice of having a Bezin. No, the Yehuda himself has another suggestion of maybe how we might limit the requirement of a Bezin for get. He says, when does the Gemara say you require a Bezin? When you need to do a Kiyum. When you need a kiyum, when you have a shliach, right? So if we've learned nothing else, the first 3 months of this modern yeshiva, it's that a shliach who brings a get from Medina Sayam has to say b'fanei nechtam, b'fanei nechtam, right? B'fanei nechtam, b'fanei nechtam is a declaration that has to be pronounced in front of a bezdin so that there can be a proper kiyum of so this can count as a proper substitute of a kiyum of the shtar. So that therefore you don't have to worry about the era of the husband anymore. You don't have to be worried that he's going to be ma'arer on the validity of the get. And we paskin that even in cases where you have b'kiyin l'shma and shayaris mitzuyos bein l'rabba bein l'rabba, you don't have to worry about b'fanei nechtam b'fanei nechtam. We say it anyway because if you say it anyway, it doesn't hurt, right? Stosa says that even if you say an Eretz Yisrael, you don't have to say it, that still will accomplish the purpose of preventing the Baal from being Ma'arer afterwards if the get was Mizuyah. But in order for this B'fanei Nechtam to be effective, it has to be given over in front of a Bezdin. So certainly for those cases, we require a Baal of Bezdin. However, the halacha is, as the Gemara says, that Bezdin could be made up of two Edim. Right, we say that the Edim could count as Dayanim if the Shliach gives the get in front of them, and the Shliach himself could be one of the Dayanim. So that it could be that even if we require a Bezdin, once we're allowing Edim to be Dayanim, we could be a little bit flexible. So in fact, the Ra'im was quoted in the there's a little Kunturis at the end of Hilchos Gittin and Shulchan Aruch called Kunturis of Bikurim, which is like a supplement to the Pesukei Tshuva. And the Pesukei Tshuva, I think, also quotes this. They quote from the Ra'im, Rav Eliyahu Mizrachi, who says that even Lu Yitzuyer, that you require a Bezin for a get, you can count the Rav HaMesader or the Sofer as one. You can count the two Edim as the other two. And you already have your sisters. You need Edim anyway. You need a Sofer, you need Edim. You need a Rav HaMesader. And there's a practice, Rabbi Jachter writes in this article, to be lenient to allow the Masadir to be a sofer as well. You have certain well-known Masadir Gittin running, who also sofim, like Rav Nota Greenblatt in Memphis, Tennessee, who's done many Gittin. He's a Masadir, he's also a sofer, of others. And you put together the two Edim, so according to the Mizrahi, so you already have yourself your Bezdin. So then that would qualify basically. If a Masadir and two Edim at the very least, that should qualify even if you hold that again absolutely requires a Bezdin. So you would be Yotze that way, according to the Mizrahi and the Maisim, most poskim hold that you don't strictly speaking require a Bezdin, other than maybe for certain parts of the ceremony or certain parts of the procedure that are not necessarily Me'akiv. Is the Kabbalah Seder, so the Edim Me'akiv per se? Hard to say that it's Me'akiv. But you could argue, is that really a full-fledged Kabbalah Seder, so just the Mesader really having to see to his own satisfaction, basically, that that everything was done Kedas U'Kedin. I'm not sure how many say that you need a full-fledged Bezdin. The other part of the ritual that you can say requires a Bezdin is the Hataras Nedarim. The Hataras Nedarim also. Whatever three people you have there, it could be the Sofer and two Edim, that for sure. It could be anyone who does the Hataras Nedarim. You have three Kosher, Kosher Yisraelim who do the Hataras Nedarim. That should be sufficient. So it could be that the practice of requiring a Bezdin or even being strict about a Bezdin really emerged from the fact that you have so many get situations which by definition, or parts of the get procedure where a Bezdin would be necessary, whether it's a Tara Sedarim, whether it's Kabbalah Seder, whether it is a get Ayyadeh Shliach, or, to be quite frank, whether it's a get Ayyadeh Kfiyah, because you still could have the possibility of a get Ayyadeh Kfiyah nowadays, and that presumably would say, at least would require a Bezdin Kasher to make the determination that a get is, that the grounds for Kfiyah are sufficiently present in a given situation, and therefore that a get can be given despite the fact that the husband is on some level, whatever that level would be, that the husband is being coerced. So that one could throw in the following argument, and that is that maybe one reason to be mahadir, to have a bezdin for every single get, is because who knows whether certain shilos may arise that the husband is really being coerced on some level. And maybe just as you need a bezdin for kfiyah, if you need a bezdin for kfiyah, so you might need a bezdin to make a determination that under certain circumstances, a situation either counts as kfiyah or doesn't count as kfiyah. So you put kfiyah in the domain of the bezdin, so it's not such a stretch to say that it's appropriate to have a bezdin to be done to make a determination in any given get that this is a case where the circumstances surrounding the giving of the get appropriately evidence the free will and volition of the husband and do not constitute kafir. I haven't seen anyone make that argument, but I think that it's not a ridiculous consideration. Yes.
But don't we say by din Torah that ein ein nasid dayan? So that if midina, you need three dayanim, and then you're going to say, oh, well, I'm going to count the eidim as the dayanim as well, then you haven't helped yourself.
So if the rabbanans, we don't say ein ein nasid dayan. If kiyum is only the rabbanans, so then an eid is nasid dayan. Even with respect to the derisas, an eid havo, it could be a dayan. It's not eid a maid. An eid havo, it could be a dayan. But certainly, if you're only dealing with an issue of kiyum, which is surely only the rabbanan, you find that beferish the gemara says beferish. It's only the rabbanan. First stop. So it's only the rabbanan. So an eight could be a dayan. Okay, should we, Rabbi Schwartz? So until when do we have?
Until
2:40. Until 2:40. So I guess okay. I can go another couple of minutes then. All right. So getting back to the English the English seder again. So then the next part of the English Seder Get, this is on page 27, is the husband basically appoints the scribe, he appoints the sofer to write the get. So here, this is always tricky, because basically what happens is that the sofer presents the writing materials to the husband, says these are your writing materials, because they have to belong to the husband. And there's always like a little joke about, you know, it says because of law, you should really write the get yourself, but I assume you're not a trained scribe, you know, so you don't really want to write the get, I can write the get for you, whatever, you know, so, I have seen a couple of times a husband say, no, I'll write the get, and they're like, just kidding, but what happens effectively is that then the husband approaches the sofer to write the get. There's a question as to whether the sofer is acting as the shliach of the husband or whether it's simply sufficient or whether the need of the appointment of the sofer is that it be written b'tzivoy habaal, but that there isn't an explicit requirement that the sofer actually be the shliach of the husband. That's a little bit of a dion. The Beis Shmuel at the beginning of Simen Kof Chof discusses both deus, but essentially there's no real nafkamina in terms of how the actual appointment is made, because it's made in a fashion where the scribe is essentially serving on behalf of the husband. However you need to be magdir him, he's serving on behalf of the husband in terms of writing, that the husband is writing the get with the sofer's hands. But as a result of that, the husband has to take the writing materials and then has to hand the writing materials to the husband, to the sofer, so that the sofer, the sofer gave it to the husband, and the husband's going to return this writing materials to the sofer so that the sofer can write the get. So then there could be the possibility of a misimpression on the part of the husband that he's actually returning the writing materials to the sofer. So the practice of many misadre gittin And I think Rabbi Jachta mentions this in his article as well, is basically to ask the husband, either to tell the husband after he gives over the writing materials, even though you're giving this to me, they're still your writing materials. So, you know, you're handing over your writing materials to me. Or to just ask the husband, okay, whose writing materials are these? And you'd be surprised. Usually the husband gets it right, which is a good sign of, you know, how misogynists are doing their job in terms of making the husband understand exactly what is going on. And usually they understand that the writing materials still belong to them. And the what you have in front of you is really the English sort of, you know, the English version or elucidation of the requirement for a get to be written lishma. And we know that the Gemara uses the word lishma, and if you look later on in the Perek Beis, it becomes clear that lishma has many different components. One component of lishma is that the get has to be written specifically for the husband, the kasav. Another is that it has to be written specifically for the wife law. And one is sefer krisus, that it has to be written specifically for the purpose of gerushin. So we include all three elements in the English formulation of the lishma requirement. It has to be written specifically for me, divorce within my right, lishmiya my behalf, lishma and her behalf, shem gerushin, for the purpose of divorce, that it has to, that all of those components basically are enumerated by the husband in the appointment of the sofer, and then the same lishma specifications are also enumerated by the husband afterwards in his appointment of the two witnesses basically to sign the get. And that is the formulation at the bottom of the page. So what I'd like to discuss when we resume next time is, we got to page 2 of the Maror Mekomos, which certainly appears appropriate, is to discuss the nature of under what circumstances a husband can appoint the sofer to write the get, the eidim to sign the get, or a shliach to deliver the get, in those cases where the husband is not directly present before a Beis Din. The formulation you saw is the standard formulation where a husband is directly present before the Beis Din. What happens if the husband is in a remote location where there is no Beis Din? Can a husband authorize a get to be written by signing a document giving his written authorization? Can a husband authorize a get to be given by saying in front of other individuals, I am authorizing the following Beis Din to write the get? Can a husband authorize a get to be written over the telephone? Can a husband authorize a get to be given through video teleconference? So all of these issues have been visited and have been written about, and we'll talk about them. We'll talk about them next time. We'll also talk about the various vagaries of delivering a get through a shliach. We'll talk about the notion of not being motzi lies on a get. And we'll talk about various inyanim of when a get can be coerced through the husband and other measures of pressure that can be taken upon recalcitrant spouses. And we'll talk about the prenuptial agreement and the get law. And finally, reach haget. And hopefully we'll be able to get it all done before the end of next time. Shkaya.
Yes. How does this deal with the problem?
Take another copy of the
You mean after separate get?